And abandon false ideas and false assumptions and bad associations. The current progressive community, I guess, is in opposition to that. That's the best I can do with saying it.
Well, at least not everybody. I don't think everybody, but there are some very vocal people who seem to think you can shame these fascists into mending their ways. And I don't think that seems very unlikely to me. Are you still on the line? I guess not, but we're getting near the end of the show. How do you deal with not just Nazis, but just racist people? Racism seems to pop up in many, many ways, many unexpected places. How do you deal with it? This is something that really needs some sort of solution or some sort of progress. But we are near the end of the show now, and I'd like to thank our people for calling in, and I'd like to thank KBOO Radio. This is your radio station, and it's people out there, our listeners, our members, who keep this station on the air. We are here for you, and we are here to talk with you and to hear your voice on the airwaves. So this is stay tuned to KBOO, because it is your radio station, and there are more good programs coming up. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
The following program is presented by WINGS, the Women's International News Gathering Service.
We were making a revolution. We were making statements out there in the world that we were lesbians. We were strong lesbians playing music and dancing the dance. You can't take that away from people. Once they feel it, it's theirs.
Sista Boom is a women's samba marching band that has been showing up at Bay Area demonstrations for close to 40 years. I'm Hannah Wilson. I've been a member of Sista Boom through much of its history, a history of women's empowerment and queer liberation. We've been in the streets at Gay Pride, the Dyke March, anti-war marches, the Occupy movement, immigrant justice demonstrations, and the women's marches. Wherever we go, Sista Boom brings power, energy, and spirit.
It's a beautiful community of people. We're spreading social justice, but having a great time and sharing great music.
I'm dancing, I'm moving, I'm beating the bass. And it's just this level of power and enjoyment that I don't feel in anything else that I do.
No matter what kind of march it is, we bring spirit and joy to it.
In the beginning, just being a woman drummer was a radical act. This is Sista Boom member, Michelle Finley.
There was a particular incident in the fifth grade, so I was 10 years old, and the boys, when the teacher walked out of the room, the boys would start boom, boom. There was this bad beat. They called it Scorpio. I don't know why. And I still remember how I was, boom, bah, and they would play different parts, and it was just the boys. And one time it felt so good that I just started, like, just with a pulse, you know. And they stopped. You know, they just all stopped like one and looked at me, and I was ashamed, and I didn't know why. And I said, why? You know, I said, what? And they said, girls ain't supposed to drum. And I just took that as fact. It just felt like authority. And I was so ashamed, and I looked around, and the girls were looking at me kind of strangely, and I was like, I've messed up again socially. You know, how come I never seem to know the rules?
One of the pioneering models for women drummers has been Carolyn Brandy, the founder of Sista Boom. Carolyn began learning to play the conga drum in 1968, one of very few women breaking that taboo. She talks about her struggles on the way to becoming a highly accomplished drummer.
I'd go to the park, and everybody in the hole that were playing in an area would get up and go to another area. It definitely was not something that women were doing. It was unusual. And comments, you know, like I would never let my daughter put that thing between her legs, or threats, you know, like you're going to start bleeding and never stop, or your breasts are going to fall to the ground, or all these terrible things were going to happen. So I just kind of kept on. And like I said, I did have support from my family at the time. So, yeah. So, and as it turns out, at the same moment, a lot of women in other places were going through the same thing. I didn't realize, but I mean, Native American women were, it was taboo for them to play the native drum. But not just in the United States. African women, it was taboo for them to play the drum. Chinese women, all over the whole world. Indian women, Middle Eastern women, you name it. Women were not supposed to play drums pretty much everywhere on the planet.
In the women's liberation movement of the 1970s, women began challenging all kinds of taboos. Sista Boom member Bonnie Lockhart describes that time.
It was part of the way our lives were then. I mean, it was incredibly exciting, but it was connected to excitement that so many women in a community of women were feeling about, first of all, there being a community of women. I mean, we wanted to be ourselves and experiment with what justice and freedom would look like if it was on our terms entirely. And so I think that being a percussionist in that context was one way of expressing that freedom and expressing the joy and the release and the novelty of knowing that we could do things that we had been told our whole lives as girls that we couldn't. And experiencing it in, you know, whether it was to be a mechanic or whether it was to be a writer or whether it was to have children free of male dominance, or so many ways that we realized that we could be leaders in union movements, in cultural movements. It was just part of that. It's hard to describe how exciting that was at that time.
Over the years, Carolyn Brandy became an expert in Cuban-style drumming on conga and bata drums, and a percussionist with the all-women's jazz band Alive. She founded Women Drummers International and the Women's Drum Camp Born to Drum. In 1981, she created Sista Boom. The band was predominantly lesbian, but all women were welcomed, including those who had never drummed before.
Sista Boom came out of an idea in 1981. I was in a band called Alive, and we were touring the nation, and one spring I was home, and I thought, oh, we should get together and put together a contingent to march in Gay Day in San Francisco. It's a big deal in San Francisco. And so I put a call out, you know, everybody who wants to march in the Gay Day parade, we're going to meet at Aquatic Park on this certain day at a certain hour. And so that day came, and there was like over 60 women that had showed up, and it was for women to do. So we started rehearsing, and we just had a ball. Dancers came, and by the time we ended up, we had over 120 women that were dancing and marching. And then we named the group Sista Boom. Sista Boom has done a lot of political marches, you know, where we can help raise the energy lots and lots and lots over the years.
The Gay Freedom Day Parade, leading off the band were the Sista Boom dancers, wearing brilliantly colored costumes with fringes that swayed. Next came band leader Carolyn Brandy, walking backwards while playing her drum and blowing signals on her whistle. Then came rows of Sister Boom women all in white, marching in synchronous steps, playing a joyous Brazilian rhythm. The front rows played the bells and tambourines, followed by the drummers with snares, toms, and large bass drums. As the band marched the wide boulevard of Market Street, the throng of onlookers lining the sidewalks would cheer. Like Pied Pipers, the band created an ever-growing surge of marchers dancing behind Sista Boom to the infectious beat. In 1982, an athletic event was planned, the Gay Olympics. It was a gathering of gay and lesbian athletes from all over the world. Runners carried a torch across the country, from the Stonewall Inn in New York to Kezar Stadium in San Francisco, the site of the opening ceremonies. Sista Boom was invited to perform in the opening procession. But in a maddening turn of events, the U.S. Olympic Committee sued to bar the use of the word Olympics in the name. They won despite never having objected to the Crab Cooking Olympics, the Rat Olympics, or the Xerox Olympics, only to the Gay Olympics. The name was changed to the Gay Games, and the event went on as planned.
The Gay Games were amazing. The Gay Games were really, really ecstatic. I remember marching around in the stadium, you know, like an Olympic parade. The other thing I remember about is Tina Turner played.
And we got to stand like 15 feet away from her as she sang with her Pussycats. It was wild. That made my day. My life.
By the spring of 1985, what had been a racially diverse band had developed a problem.
White women were always coming in and feeling comfortable, but women of color would come in and they would be there for about 3 or 4 months, and then they would have like a poor excuse or no excuse, and they would just stop showing up.
Shirley Hargrove.
And so that's when we first decided to start looking, actively looking at race and unlearning racism.
Bonnie Lockhart.
Carolyn and several other people said, you know, this isn't acceptable. We can't just keep doing this. We can't just having attrition of people of color and become a whiter and whiter group. And we can do something about it. We can study and we can see how other people have dealt with how racism affects a small group.
Two things were done to address this. For a time, no more white women were allowed to join, and an unlearning racism training was held, led by Ricky Sharover Marcuse and Gloria Rodriguez. The women of color and the white women had separate meetings and then met together in Alliance Building.
I've certainly, as a black woman in America, had experienced racism, but to actually have a time dedicated to unlearning racism and to really put energy into formalizing a means of critiquing race and looking at internalized racism about how if you're a recipient of racism, after a while, the racists do not have to take an active stance in your oppression and you start to oppress yourself and other members of your group. That was just like an amazing opening of the eyes to how it worked and how we could overcome it. Also, when Ricky put us in two circular formations, the women of color in the center and the white women on the outside, and I really appreciated her restriction of the white women not being able to interrupt what the women of color were saying. That whole dynamic was amazing.
Alicia Stiles.
For women of color to be listened to, not just seen, but to be listened to, because we have our own story.
Gail Kissin. The most important thing, at least for the white women, that we learned was the importance of being an ally. That it was very easy to split people into the victim, the perpetrator, the suffering one, the one not suffering. A lot of those myths got broken down just in the experience of talking to each other. And the ally part that most moved me was that you're not always a target. And when you're not the target, your role is to be an ally. So if somebody's being attacked for homophobia and you're straight, your job is to be an ally. That is your role. And we started to understand the changing roles and got very deeply connected to each other. And a lot of those relationships lasted long after we were just banging on skins and metal in the streets.
You know, it was painful. People dropped out because it was painful, but it was a really positive thing. And I think that one of the answers to why has this group survived so long is that we took that seriously and we did that work. And we all really grew from it.
And I think, too, it really made for building alliances and allies because it was real. The white women really had to sit there and listen to the women of color, to listen to our pain, to listen to our challenges, and honor our humanity. All of us who managed to do the whole process, that had to be one of the milestones of my growth and development, probably for my lifetime, if I actually think about how much I grew during that period, how much I had to expand my thinking. It was wonderful.
We learned how to be a community and created the kind of world that we want the world to look like in our group.
In 1987, there was a demonstration planned in Washington, D.C., called the March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. By then, AIDS was raging through the gay men's community. Ronald Reagan was president, and he said nothing about the epidemic. His communications director, Pat Buchanan, called AIDS nature's revenge on gay men. The AIDS activist group ACT UP had just coined the slogan, silence equals death. Other than AIDS, gay issues and gay people were almost never mentioned in the mainstream press. There were virtually no openly gay celebrities and no gay characters on TV. We were fighting to be visible. Gail Kissin had taken over leadership of the band for a time. She remembers.
1987 was the March on Washington for gay and lesbian people. At that time, that's how we delineated what our work was in the world. And how were we going to get a 40 to 50 piece percussion ensemble of a bunch of ragtag women 3,000 miles east? We put together a whole series of fundraising concerts, and every weekend we showed up many times in the Castro. We probably were in 80% of the gay bars there, and the gay men would throw money in a bucket to send us to Washington to represent.
The day before the demonstration, marchers poured into D.C., Sista Boom members among them. That night, we wandered the raucous streets, filled with jubilant queer folks from all over the country. The next day, Sista Boom joined the massive march.
Lesbian moms are mighty. Walking in that area of Washington, D.C., where all the government buildings were and the White House, And I remember all our music, all our sound was amplified because we were walking down the street through a tunnel of, you know, really heavy, like stone structures, you know, all the government buildings. And the reverberation was amazing. And I thought at that time we were just like so strong and so powerful. And we were a presence in our capital.
I'd never been there. I'd never been to Washington, D.C., but I'd seen those pictures. I knew what the Supreme Court looked like. I knew what the White House looked like. I knew what the Lincoln Memorial looked like. And just to be there and claiming that, you know, one of the Stonewall chants was the streets belong to the people. And this was like the best iteration of that you could imagine. Like the streets were just taken over. It was so many people that it seemed infinite. And then there was just the joy of being with each other and celebrating a freedom that many of us felt was never going to be ours.
After the march, there was time before we were to perform on stage, and many of us went to view the AIDS Memorial Quilt. It was being displayed in full for the first time. The 1,920 panels took up a section of the National Mall larger than a football field. Each panel was a memorial to a loved one created by lovers, friends, and family. It had been unfolded at dawn as the names of those who had been lost were read.
Steve Pascaglia.
Ron Connor.
A canvas walkway formed a path among the panels for viewers to wander, and many held each other and wept.
Roy Lanzano. Larry Spivey.
C.W. Willard.
And walking through those panels, I was weak with grief. A lot of us had that feeling. So basically, we galvanized all that grief and all that love and all that sorrow and all that wonder at how the humanity of our community could be so forsaken as well as so beautifully portrayed. So it was holding a lot. We held a lot. We weren't just girls banging on drums anymore.
When it was getting our time to perform, we assembled behind the outdoor stage. I will never forget the moment when we stepped on stage and looked out at the crowd, half a million strong. It was a stunning sight. Our drums began their beat, and hundreds of thousands moved to our rhythms.
We were looking out at this sea of queer people and queer supporters, and we never felt so recognized in our nation, because that's when we were really, really trying to be visible around this.
There's nothing that can describe what it looked like when we got on that stage and looked out. And for me personally, you know, I had gone to high school just outside of Washington, D.C. and had marched at the Reflecting Pool numerous times, but never for myself and for lesbian and gay people. So, it was pretty incredible.
We were making a revolution. We were making statements out there in the world that we were lesbians. We were strong lesbians playing music and dancing the dance. You can't take that away from people. Once they feel it, it's theirs.
In 2008, Sista Boom was invited to be in the movie Milk, about the life of Harvey Milk, starring Sean Penn. We were filmed marching down a San Francisco street lined with VW bugs and other 70s cars as part of a protest.
We are everywhere! We are everywhere!
We had a great time doing it, even though in the end, our scene got cut. Later that year, the California Supreme Court struck down the state's existing laws banning same-sex marriage. Exuberant couples rushed to San Francisco City Hall to marry under its marble rotunda.
Sista Boom creating a drum jam on the steps of City Hall. Carolyn Brandy,
yeah.
What brings you here for this big celebration?
The liberation of gay people being able to get married. I mean, you know, it's a human rights issue, and we're here to celebrate.
The first couple to get married in San Francisco City Hall were Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon. Together for 55 years, they were pioneers who in the 1950s founded the Daughters of Bilitis, the first lesbian civil rights group in the United States. They were activists throughout their lives. Less than 3 months after their City Hall marriage, Del Martin died. Sista Boom performed at her memorial.
They did a huge memorial in City Hall, and it was really wonderful. We marched in, and they had a lot of entertainment, a lot of speeches, and it was a very inspiring moment. It really, truly was. Because these women, you know, they were gay back in the day when it was really dangerous to be out, and it was dangerous to declare yourself as a lesbian. It was really, they were very brave and courageous, very inspiring women.
In 2012, Carolyn Brandy invited drummer Mar Stevens to take over leadership.
I'm not the leader anymore. I turned that over to Mar Stevens, who's wonderful, and because I'm just getting too old to be marching around.
I hadn't been with Sista Boom in some years, and then Carolyn called me. She said, Mar, you know, I'm not going to be able to lead Sista Boom this year. You know, my knee's bothering me, and I just really need someone to lead. And I thought about you. And I was like, I was scared to death. You know, I wanted to do it. I wanted to do it for Carolyn, especially because she's been holding it down for all the years and all the beauty and power that comes out of Sista Boom. I had to be a quick study. She gave me a whistle. I came to rehearsal. I was a nervous wreck. I didn't even know how to blow a whistle. You know, I didn't really have time because Dyke March was coming up really quickly. I only had like about 3 or 4 weeks. But the women were so wonderful. They were so, they trusted me. And I had so much support from Carolyn that I wanted to make sure that I could be a quick study and just keep the lineage going because she did a lot. And I just want her to be proud of me and of all the women in the group that's really being dedicated to keeping Sista Boom going because we're still going, you know, after Carolyn. We're still going strong.
Sista Boom continues to play every year in the Dyke March and Pride parades. In recent years, the band brought its beat to the Women's March and other demonstrations. This is from an interfaith protest in solidarity with undocumented immigrants outside a detention center where they're being held by ICE.
People of the world, welcome all! Beat your drum, no ban, no wall! People of the world, welcome all! Beat your drum, no band, no
one. And I remember the families who were there, mostly women with their kids, and their partners were being detained. And they were just really happy to hear this loud, assertive music that was clearly on their side. And I think I was really glad we could do that. It was a time when most of us are like, what the heck can we do about this unbelievable cruelty? And just to come with our music, make it clear that we were there to support the families and to support the people who were being held felt great. And so we got reports that people inside could hear us, and that was really great that we could get that message through with our drums.
It's just been a very incredible journey with Sista Boom, and it was something that was started just to have fun, you know, and it turned out it really served the community. It had a place in the community that served people in a number of different ways. One was playing together in a group that it's just a good feeling to be with others. And the other is to be out in force to support what's right in, you know, our country, what we need in our country. So it's always been in service to the community.
You've been listening to Sista Boom, 40 Years in the Streets. Additional Sista Boom voices were Elsie Militar, Nina Roberts, and Liz Hendrickson. Gratitude to all the members of Sista Boom, past, present, and future. Many thanks to Dana Bergen for production assistance and to Addie Gevins for documentary mentorship. I've been your host and producer, Hannah Wilson.
For more programs in the Wings series, visit wingsradio.org/wordpress or email wings@wings.org. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Wednesday, March 3rd at 10 p.m., KBOO makes everything metal. It's the Metal March, a special benefit show